We both shall live. Tears well in her eyes. Don't cry, I whisper, brushing away a stray tear with my thumb.
Why won't you talk to me? Please, Christian.
I close my eyes. Talking about it makes it real, Anna.
I vowed I would bring you solace in times of need. Please don't make me break my vows.
She pleads. I have no defenses against her. I love her. Before Anna, I didn't feel anything, and now I feel everything. Every emotion is so heightened. It's hard to process, hard to understand. Her expression hasn't changed. She's begging me. I sigh, defeated. It's arson, I whisper, as if this is a huge failing on my part. And my biggest worry is that they are after me, and if they are after me, the next thought is unbearable.
They might get me.
Anna finishes the sentence in a whisper and caresses my face as her eyes soften.
Thank you.
What for?
For telling me.
I shake my head. You can be very persuasive, Mrs. Gray.
And you can brood and internalize all your feelings and worry yourself to death. You'll probably die of a heart attack before you're 40. And I want you around far longer than that.
You'll be the death of me. The sight of you on the jet ski, I nearly did have a coronary. I flop back on the bed and cover my eyes with the back of my hand to blot out the memory. But it doesn't work. In my mind, she's lying on the cold, hard floor. I shudder.
Christian, it's a jet ski. Even kids ride jet skis. Can you imagine what you'll be like when we visit your place in Aspen and I go skiing for the first time?
I gasp and turn to look at her, alarmed. Skiing. No. Our place, I remind her. She's wearing that smile, the one I stare at every day in my office. Is she laughing at me? No, I don't think so. It's her compassion.
I'm a grown-up, Christian, and much tougher than I look. When are you going to learn this?
I shrug. She doesn't look tough to me, not when I see her out cold on a sticky green rug.
So, the fire. Do the police know about the arson?
Yes, I respond.
Good.
Security is going to get tighter, I tell her.
I understand.
Her eyes sweep down over my body, and suddenly her lips quirk up. What?
You.
Me?
Yes, you. Still dressed.
Oh. I glance down. I'm still dressed. I grin when I look back at Anna and let her know how hard it is for me to keep my hands off of her, especially when she's giggling. Her eyes brighten immediately and she moves quickly, straddling me. Shit. I grab her wrists, somehow knowing what she's going to do. No, I whisper, as the darkness makes an unwelcome return to my chest, ready to claw its way out. I take a deep breath. Please don't, I plead. I couldn't bear it. I was never tickled as a child. Anna puts her hands down and I continue. I used to watch Carrick with Elliot and Mia tickling them, and it looked like such fun, but I... She puts her finger on my lips.
Hush, I know.
She removes her finger and plants a sweet kiss in its place. Scooting down, she rests her cheek to my chest, and I hold her, pressing my nose into her hair. Her scent is soothing, mixed with the pungent fragrance of sex. We lie for several minutes in our calm after the storm, before she interrupts our quiet, comfortable silence.
What is the longest you've gone without seeing Dr. Flynn?
2 weeks? Why? Do you have an incorrigible urge to tickle me?
No.
She laughs.
I think he helps you.
I snort. He should. I pay him enough. I stroke her hair, and she turns her face to me.
Are you concerned for my well-being, Mrs. Gray? Every good wife is concerned for her beloved husband's well-being, Mr. Gray.
Beloved, I whisper, wanting to say the word out loud, to hear it ring between us with all its significance.
Very much beloved. She leans up to kiss me. It's a relief that she knows the truth, and yet she still loves me. My anxiety has evaporated, replaced by hunger. I smile down at her. Do you want to go ashore to eat?
I want to eat wherever you're happiest.
Good. Aboard is where I can keep you safe. Thank you for my present. I reach for it and, turning it around, hold it at arm's length and snap a picture of the two of us wrapped around each other. We take coffee post-dinner inside the impressive dining room on the Fair Lady. What are you thinking about? I ask, as Anna looks wistfully out the window.
Versailles.
Ostentatious, wasn't it? Anna looks at our surroundings. This is hardly ostentatious, I observe.
I know. It's lovely. The best honeymoon a girl could want.
Really? I smile, pleased.
Of course it is.
We only have 2 more days. Is there anything you'd like to see or do?
Just to be with you,
she says. I rise and come around the table and drop a kiss on her forehead. Well, can you do without me for about an hour? I need to check my emails, find out what's happening at home.
Sure,
she says. Thank you for the camera. As I head into the study, I notice that for some reason, I'm feeling far more settled. Could it be the delicious dinner, the sex, or telling Anna about the arson? It could be a combination of all those. I pull my phone out of my pocket and notice a missed call from my dad.
Son,
he says when he answers his phone.
Hi, Dad. How's the south of France?
It's great.
And Anna?
She's great, too. I can't help my smile.
You sound happy.
Yes. The only fly in the ointment is the fire.
Your mother told me about that, but not much damage, I hear.
No.
What's the matter, Christian?
He adopts a serious tone, probably in response to my monosyllabic reply.
It was arson.
Shit.
Police involved?
Yes.
Good. This and your helicopter, it's a lot to deal with.
Welch is on it, but we don't have a clue who it might be. Have you noticed anything unusual?
No, I can't say that I have, but I'll keep a watchful eye.
Do, I insist.
Is the jet safe? He asks.
The Gulf Stream? Yes, I think so.
Perhaps you should fly back commercial.
Why?
It's just a thought. I don't want to worry you. I'll let you go.
Thanks for checking in, Dad.
Christian, I'm here for you. Always. Enjoy the rest of your evening.
He hangs up, and I wonder what he's going to do with the information I've just given him. I don't dwell on it, but call Roz for an update. I'm still on the phone when Anna pops her head around the door later. She blows a kiss at me and leaves me to my conversation with Andrea, who is sorting our flights back to Seattle. Anna is curled up asleep when I return to our cabin. I slip into bed beside her and pull her into my arms without waking her. I kiss her hair and close my eyes. I have to keep her safe. I have to keep her safe. Saturday, August 20th, 2011. Through the lens, I watch my wife sleep soundly at last. Earlier, Anna was talking, begging someone in her dreams not to go. I wonder who. Me? Where would I go without her? She's been plagued by nightmares since the arson at Gray House was confirmed. She's even taken to sucking her thumb on the odd occasion while she sleeps. I wonder if it might have been better for us to fly home earlier. But I was reluctant to leave the tranquility of Fair Lady, and so was Anna. And at least I've been able to comfort her after her night terrors, hold her, soothe her, like she holds me when I have mine. We have to catch this asshole. How dare he or she frighten my wife? I've taken my father's advice and we're flying commercial. It's been a while for me, but Anna has never flown international first class, so it will be a new experience for her. We're leaving out of London, and I've grounded the jet in Nice until it's had a thorough inspection. I'm not taking any chances,
not with my crew, and not with my wife. Apart from the nightmares, the remaining days of our honeymoon have been blissful. Reading, eating, swimming, sunbathing on board, making love. These have been magical days. There's just one more activity I want to do before we go. I push the shutter and hope that the sound won't wake her. The camera's been a welcome gift, and I've rediscovered my passion for photography. We're in such a splendid photogenic setting, after all. The fair lady is Yar. Anna stirs and stretches her hand out to my side of the bed, looking for me. The gesture warms my heart. I'm not far away, baby. She opens her eyes, startled, I think, so I put the camera on the floor and quickly lie down beside her. Hey, don't panic. Everything's fine, I whisper. I hate her wary look. I push her hair off her face. You've been so jumpy these last couple of days.
I'm okay, Christian.
She lies. Her forced smile is for my sake.
Were you watching me sleep?
Yes, you were talking.
Oh?
Her eyes widen. You're worried. I kiss the soft spot above her nose to try to reassure her. When you frown, a little V forms just here. It's soft to kiss. Don't worry, baby. I'll look after you.
It's not me I'm worried about, it's you,
she grumbles.
Who's looking after you?
I'm big enough and ugly enough to look after myself. Come, get up. There's one thing I'd like to do before we head home. Something fun. I slap her ass, and I'm rewarded with a gratifying squeal. I bound off the bed, and she follows. Shower later. Put your swimsuit on.
Okay.
The crew have lowered the jet ski into the water. My life vest is on, and I'm helping Anna into hers. I strap the ignition key and kill cord to her wrist.
You want me to drive?
She asks, incredulous. Yes. I grin. That's not too tight.
It's fine. Is that why you're wearing a life jacket?
She arches a brow, unimpressed. Yes.
Such confidence in my driving capabilities, Mr. Gray.
As ever, Mrs. Gray.
Well, don't lecture me,
she warns, and I know she's talking from bitter experience. I hold up my palms and surrender. Would I dare?
Yes, you would, and yes, you do, and we can't pull over and argue on the sidewalk here.
Fair point well made, Mrs. Gray. Are we going to stand on this platform all day debating your driving skills, or are we going to have some fun?
Fair point well made, Mr. Gray.
She climbs onto the craft, and I slide on behind her, and look up to find we've attracted a small audience on deck. The crew, our French security, and Taylor. I kick us away from the small pontoon, and wrap my arms and clamp my thighs around Anna. She inserts the ignition key, presses the start button, and the engine powers into life with a gutsy roar.
Ready?
She shouts. As I'll ever be. Slowly she opens up the accelerator and the jet ski glides away from the ship. Steady, Anna. I tighten my hold on her as Anna increases our speed and we shoot across the water.
Whoa!
I shout, but it doesn't stop her. She leans forward, taking me with her, and speeds toward the open sea, then veers toward the shore, where the runway at Nice Airport juts out into the Mediterranean.
Next time we do this, we'll have two jet skis,
I shout. That would be fun, racing together. Anna soars across the waves. We bounce a little, as it's choppier on the water today with the brisk summer breeze. As she nears the shore, a plane flies overhead. The noise is deafening. Shit. Anna swerves suddenly. I shout, but I'm too late, and we're both bucked off the craft and into the Mediterranean. The water closes over my head, into my eyes and my mouth, but I kick up and surface immediately, shaking my head and looking for Anna. The jet ski bobs, lifeless and harmless, not far from us, and Anna is wiping the water from her eyes. I swim toward her, relieved she's surfaced.
You okay?
I ask when I get close.
Yes,
she croaks, and she's grinning from ear to ear. Why is she smiling? She just catapulted us into the cold sea. I pull her into my wet embrace and hold her face between my palms, checking to see that she wasn't hit by the jet ski.
See? That wasn't so bad.
She gushes, and I know she's okay.
No, I guess it wasn't, except I'm wet.
I'm wet, too.
I like you wet. I leer at her.
Christian!
She admonishes me for my lewd look, and I can't help myself. I kiss her. No, I consume her. We're both winded when I pull away.
Come, let's head back. We have to shower. I'll drive.
I swim over to the jet ski, vault onto it, and pull her up behind me. Was that fun, Mrs. Gray?
It was. Thank you.
No, thank you. Shall we go home now?
Yes, please.
Anastasia is sipping champagne and reading off her iPad as we sit in the Concorde lounge at Heathrow and wait for our connecting flight to Seattle. This is one of the things I loathe about traveling on a scheduled flight, the waiting. But Anna seems happy enough. Occasionally, from the corner of my eye, I notice her surreptitious glances in my direction. Inside, I'm dancing. I love that she's watching me. I'm reading the Financial Times. It makes for sober reading. The global markets are still skittish in the wake of the recent budget deficit issues and Black Monday. The dollar is sinking. Also, there's an article on whether the rich should pay more tax. Warren Buffett seems to think we should, and maybe he's right. Anna takes a photograph, with the flash on, surprising me. I blink the blur of the bright lights out of my eyes and watch as she switches the flash off. How are you, Mrs. Gray? I ask.
Sad to be going home.
She pouts.
I like having you to myself.
I take her hand and kiss her knuckles in turn.
Me too,
I whisper.
But?
She asks. Damn, she heard my unspoken doubt. Her eyes narrow, shrewd and interrogative. She's not going to let this go until I tell her. I sigh. I want this arsonist caught and out of our lives.
Oh.
Exactly. I'll have Welch's balls on a platter if he lets anything like that happen again. My tone sounds cold and sinister, even to me. But this has gone on too long. We need to catch the fucker. Anna gapes at me, then raises the camera and takes a quick shot.
Gotcha.
I smile, relieved that she's lightened the mood. I think it's time to board our flight.
Come.
Sawyer, can we go through the front? I ask, and he pulls the Audi up to the curb outside Escala. Taylor climbs out and opens my door. Anna is fast asleep.
Thanks, Taylor, I say as I stretch my legs. It's good to be back.
It is, sir.
I'll wake Anna. Opening her door, I lean over her.
Hey, sleepyhead, we're home.
I unbuckle her seatbelt. She hums, and I lift her into my arms.
Hey, I can walk.
She grumbles sleepily.
Oh, no, baby.
I need to carry you over the threshold. She puts her arms around my neck.
Up all 30 floors?
Mrs. Gray, I am very pleased to announce that you've put on some weight.
What?
So if you don't mind, we'll use the elevator. Taylor opens the doors to the Escala lobby and smiles.
Welcome home, Mr. Gray. Mrs. Gray.
Thanks, Taylor, I answer. We head into the lobby.
What do you mean I've put on weight?
Anna glares at me. She's pissed.
Not much.
I grin to reassure her. Tightening my hold on her as I walk to the elevator, I recall how she looked when I picked her up from SIP after we split up, how thin and sad she was. The memory is sobering.
What is it?
She asks. You've put on some of the weight you lost when you left me. My answer is quiet. That was me. I was responsible for her sadness. I never want to see her like that again. I press the call button.
Hey.
Anna caresses my face and her fingers entwine in my hair.
If I hadn't gone, would you be standing here like this now?
And just like that, she pours oil on my troubled waters.
No.
I smile, because it's true. I step into the elevator, holding my wife, and lightly brush my lips over hers. No, Mrs. Gray, I wouldn't. But I would know I could keep you safe, because you wouldn't defy me.
I like defying you,
she says with her coquettish smile. I chuckle. I know, and it's made me so happy.
Even though I'm fat?
She pouts. I laugh. Even though you're fat. My lips capture hers once more, and she tightens her hold on my hair as we lose ourselves in each other. The elevator pings, and we are back at Escala for the first time as husband and wife. Very happy. I whisper, my body stirring. I carry her into the foyer, and I want to bypass everything and everyone and take her to bed. Welcome home, Mrs. Gray. I kiss her once more.
Welcome home, Mr. Gray.
Her face is alight with joy. I carry her into the main living room and set her down on the kitchen island. From the cupboard, I take down two champagne flutes, and from the fridge, I retrieve a chilled bottle of Grande Anne Boulanger, our favorite rosé. Opening the bottle with a quick twist of the cork, I pour the pale pink sparkling liquid into each glass. I hand one to Anna, who's still sitting on the counter, and stand between her legs. Here's to us, Mrs. Gray.
To us, Mr. Gray.
She answers with a shy smile. We clink glasses and each take a sip. I know you're tired. I run my nose against hers. But I'd really like to go to bed and not to sleep. I kiss the corner of her sweet mouth. It's our first night back here, and you're really mine. She moans, closes her eyes, and raises her head, giving me access to her throat. Anna. You goddess, my love, my life, my wife. Sunday, August 21st, 2011. I'm expecting the smooth roll of the fair lady as she floats on the Mediterranean and the sounds of the crew readying her for the day. But when I open my eyes, I'm at home. Outside, the golden dawn heralds a beautiful morning, and beneath my arm, Anna tenses. She's staring at the ceiling, trying to stay still.
What's wrong?
I whisper. Her eyes meet mine, and for a moment she looks lost.
Nothing.
Her face softens as she smiles.
Go back to sleep.
My dick responds enthusiastically to her smile, far more roused than me. Blinking, I rub my face and stretch my limbs in an effort to wake my mind and the rest of my body. Jet lag? I ask.
Is that what this is? I can't sleep.
I have the universal panacea right here, just for you, baby. Grinning, I nudge her hip with my erection. She giggles, rolling her eyes, and her teeth tease my earlobe as her hand skates down my body to my waiting cock. When I stir an hour or so later, it's early morning. I've slept well, and Anna is still asleep beside me. I let her rest and get up quietly. A quick run in my gym is what I need. While I'm on the treadmill with Fortet blaring in my ears, I check the markets and watch the news. It's going to be quite the adjustment to return to my routine. Anna and I have been in a blissful bubble for the last few weeks, but now I'm ready to go back to work. I'm excited. My wife and I are going to forge this new life together, and as of yet, I have no idea what that will entail. Maybe we could travel. I could take Anna to see the Great Wall of China, the pyramids. Hell, all the wonders of the world. I could ease up at the office. Roz has done a great job since I've been away, and Anna could stop working. After all, she won't need the money. But she loves her job, and she's good at it. Maybe she has great ambitions in publishing. I shake my head. She would be safer if she stayed at home. Damn. Don't dwell on the negative, Gray. Anna is in the shower when I enter the bathroom, and I cannot resist. I step in behind her. Good morning. Let me scrub your back, Mrs. Gray. She hands me the sponge and body wash with a distracted smile. Lathering up the sponge, I start soaping her neck. Don't forget we're going to my parents' for lunch. I hope you don't mind. Kate will be there. I kiss her ear.
Hmm.
She murmurs, eyes closed. You okay? I ask. You're quiet.
I'm good, Christian. Getting pruney.
She wiggles her fingers. I'll let you go. She smiles, exits the shower cubicle, and grabs her robe on the way out. She seems happy enough, but I think my girl is preoccupied. Something's up. Anna is in the kitchen making breakfast when I enter. She looks lovely wearing a black strappy top and the skirt she wore on our walk around St. Paul de Vence.
Coffee?
She asks. Please.
Sourdough toast?
Please.
Preserves?
Apricot. Thanks. I kiss her cheek. I've got some things to do before we leave for lunch.
Okay, I'll bring breakfast to you.
In my study, I find Gia Mateo's latest plans for the house on my desk where Gail must have left them. Setting them aside to review later, I fire up my iMac and get to work. Welch and Barney are combing through all of the past week's footage from the CCTV cameras at Gray House, but there's no news on the arsonist yet. Welch has been rolling out additional security at each of the GEH sites. I read through the schedule for our personal protection to find it includes an additional operative. Her name is Belinda Prescott. But today, it's Ryan and Sawyer who will accompany us to my parents' place. Taylor, quite rightly, has gone to visit his daughter after so many weeks away. Anna pushes the door open using her back and places coffee and toast on my desk.
Thank you, wife.
You're welcome, husband.
Her smile is thin.
I'm going to unpack.
You don't have to. Gail can do it.
It's okay. I want to be busy.
Hey. I get up and catch her hand before she leaves, scrutinizing her face.
What's wrong?
Nothing.
She leans up to kiss my cheek.
I'll be ready to leave midday.
I frown and release her. Okay. Something's up, but I have no idea what it could be. It's unsettling. Perhaps Anna needs time to readjust to this time zone. She leaves, and I turn my attention to work, setting aside my disquiet for now. I have an email from Gia Mateo, who wants to see us tomorrow to discuss her latest plans. I let her know that's fine, and suggest a meeting for early evening. There's good news from Eurocopter. They can replace both of Charlie Tango's engines, so she should be back, fully functioning, within a couple of weeks. However, there's still no progress in the FBI investigation into her sabotage. It's irritating. Why is it taking so long? I move on and review the latest emails from Roz. The sooner I get through these, the sooner I can get back to my wife. The drive to my parents' home is a joy. I haven't driven my R8 for weeks, and with my wife by my side, I'm enjoying the lush greenery of urban Seattle. After the old world charm of the south of France, the landscape is pleasingly familiar. It's good to be home. I've missed driving, especially in this car. I check the rearview mirror, and sure enough, Sawyer and Ryan are on our tail. Anna is quiet beside me, gazing at the scenery that's dappled with summer sun as we speed top-down along I-5.
Would you let me drive this?
She asks out of the blue. Is that what she's been thinking about? Of course, what's mine is yours. If you dent it, though, I will take you into the Red Room of Pain. I give her a wolfish grin, knowing that I'm using her spurious name for the playroom, not mine. Her mouth drops open.
You're kidding. You'd punish me for denting your car? You love your car more than you love me?
She sounds incredulous. It's close. I tease, reaching over to squeeze her knee. But she doesn't keep me warm at night. I'm sure it could be arranged. You could sleep in her.
Anna retorts. I laugh, loving her banter. We haven't been home one day, and you're kicking me out already?
Why are you so pleased?
I flash her a quick grin while keeping my eyes on the road. Because this conversation is so normal. Isn't this what marriage is all about? The to and fro between us.
Normal?
She scoffs.
Not after 3 weeks of marriage, surely.
What? My smile withers. She was serious? She's gonna kick me out?
I'm kidding, Christian.
Hell, so was I. She presses her lips together, looking sullen, then mutters,
Don't worry, I'll stick to the sob.
She turns to stare at the scenery once more. So much for marital banter. Hey, what's wrong? I ask.
Nothing.
You're so frustrating sometimes, Anna. Tell me. She turns her head to me, a smirk twisting her lips.
Back at you, Gray.
I'm the problem. Me? Shit. I'm trying. I respond.
I know. Me too.
She smiles, and I think she's okay, but I'm not sure. Maybe her heart is still in the Côte d'Azur. Or perhaps she's upset over the arson. Maybe the increased security. Hell, I wish I knew.
Bro!
It's Elliot who answers the front door at my parents' home. How's it hanging? He grabs my hand and pulls me into a bear hug. Perpendicular, I mutter. How are you, Elliot?
It's great to see you, hotshot. You're looking good. You got a little sun.
Then he turns his attention to Anna.
Sister!
He bellows, and he sweeps my wife off her feet.
Hello, Elliot.
She giggles, and it's a relief to hear her laugh. He sets her down. Looking beautiful, Anna. He treating you well?
Mostly.
Come in. Elliot steps aside. Dad's in charge of the barbecue. My parents are expert hosts and love entertaining. We're on the terrace in the backyard, sitting around the table. Across the lawn, there's the familiar view of the bay and Seattle's skyline in the distance. It's still stunning. Grace has gone all out, as usual, so there's plenty of food. Carrick holds us captive with family camping stories and his barbecue skills, and we're seated with Elliot, Kate, Mia, and Ethan. It's weird. I've always felt removed from my family. Not that they excluded me. It's more that I siloed myself to protect myself. Sitting here now, watching them laugh and tease one another and me, and take such a keen interest in my wife and our honeymoon, I kind of regret having been so guarded. To think of all those years I missed, locked in an ivory tower of my own making, an accusation that Anna frequently levels at me. Perhaps she's right. Our hands are entwined, and I fondle the rings on her finger, reluctant to release her. She seems to have brightened up, the way she's laughing with Kate, whatever was bothering her forgotten, I hope. Elliot is talking about the new house.
So if you can get the plans finalized with Gia, I have a window September through to mid-November and can get the whole crew on it.
Elliot puts his arm around Kate and clasps her shoulder. His thumb lightly brushes her skin. I think he really likes her. This has to be a first. Gia is due to come over to discuss the plans tomorrow evening. I reply, I hope we can finalize everything then. I look at Anna.
Sure.
She smiles, but some of the light in her eyes fades. What is it? She's driving me crazy.
To the happy couple.
Dad raises a glass and a smile, and everyone seconds the sentiment.
And congratulations to Ethan for getting into the psych program at Seattle.
Mia interjects, pride ringing in her voice. She's obviously smitten, and I wonder if she's gotten into his pants yet. It's difficult to tell from the smirk he gives her. My family is thirsty for information about our honeymoon, so I give them an executive summary of the last 3 weeks. Anna remains quiet. Is she regretting all this? No, I can't let myself go there. Gray? Get a grip. Elliot makes some crude joke and stretches his arm, sending his glass flying into the flagstones, where it smashes rather dramatically. My mother leaps up, as do Mia and Kate, while Elliot sits there like the dope he is. Seizing the opportunity this distraction presents, I lean over and whisper to Anna, I am going to take you to the boathouse and finally spank you in there if you don't snap out of this mood. She gasps and checks that no one is listening.
You wouldn't dare.
She challenges, her voice husky. I raise a brow. Bring it, Anna.
You'd have to catch me first, and I'm wearing flats.
She hisses for my ears only. I'd have fun trying. Anna turns a delightful and familiar shade of pink and stifles her smile. There she is, my girl. Mom serves us strawberries and whipped cream, which reminds me of London. This and Eton Mess were the staple summer desserts there. As we finish up, we're caught short by a sudden shower.
Ah, everyone inside!
Grace cries as she gathers the serving dish. We all grab plates, cutlery, and glasses and bolt back into the kitchen. Anna looks happier, her hair a little wet, while she giggles with Mia. It warms my heart to see her with my family. They have fallen in love with her, like I have. Perhaps Mia will tell her what's happening with Ethan. I smile. Inquiring minds need to know. We head into the den to shelter from the rain, and I take a seat at the upright piano. It's an old, worn, but much-loved Steinway, with a warm, rich tone. I press the middle C key, and the sound rings through the room perfectly in tune. I smile, thinking of Grace. I suspect she keeps it tuned, as she plays on the odd occasion, though I haven't heard her play for years. And I haven't played here for so long, I can't even remember the last time. As a child, music was my refuge. It was somewhere I could escape and lose myself, at first in the tedious repetition of scales and arpeggios, and then in each piece I learned. Music and literature got me through puberty. There's sheet music on the rest, and I wonder who it belongs to. Maybe Grace, maybe her housekeeper. She plays, I think. It's a song I know, Wherever You Will Go by The Calling. My family gathers, continuing their conversations while I read the music. My fingers flex, instinctively following the song. I could play this. And before I know it, I've started to play. The words are on the sheet music, and I sing along. A few bars later, I'm lost in the melody and the poignant lyrics. It's just me and the piano and the music. It's a beautiful song, about loss and love. I'll go wherever you will go. Slowly, the silence in the room intrudes into my consciousness. The chatting has ceased. I stop playing and turn around on the stool to find out what has caught everyone's attention. All eyes are on me. What the hell?
Go on.
Grace prompts, her voice wavering with emotion.
I've never heard you sing, Christian. Ever.
She's almost inaudible, but I can hear her because of the oppressive silence in the room. Her face glows with pride and wonder and love. It's a gut punch. Mom. A well of feeling pours from my heart into my chest, filling me up and threatening to drown me. I can't breathe. No, I cannot do this. I shrug and surreptitiously take a deep breath and look at my wife, my anchor. She seems puzzled, possibly by the weird reaction of my family. In an effort to blot them out for a moment, I turn and stare through the French windows. This is why I distance myself. This. To escape these feelings. There's a sudden and almost spontaneous burst of chatter, and I get up and stand at the window. From the corner of my eye, I see Grace embrace my wife with an unbridled enthusiasm that surprises Anna. My mother whispers in her ear, and my throat burns with the same choking emotion from a moment ago. With a beseeching look, Grace kisses Anna's cheek, then announces in a throaty voice,
I am going to make some tea.
Anna takes pity on me and comes to my rescue.
Hi,
she says. Hi. I slip my arm around her and tug her to my side, finding comfort in her warmth
She slides her hand in the back pocket of my jeans. Together, we watch the rain through the French window, the sun still in the distance. Somewhere there must be a rainbow. Feeling better? I ask her. She nods. Good.
You certainly know how to silence a room,
she says. I do it all the time. I grin down at her.
At work, yes, but not here.
True, not here.
No one's ever heard you sing, ever?
It appears not. My tone is wry. She stares up at me as if she's trying to solve a puzzle. It's just me, Anna. Shall we go?
You going to spank me?
She whispers. What? Anna is, as ever, unexpected. Her words twist and turn through me, awakening my desire. I don't want to hurt you, but I'm more than happy to play. Anna nervously scans the room. Baby, no one can hear us. I tilt my head and whisper in her ear. Only if you misbehave, Mrs. Gray. She squirms in my arms, and her face breaks into an impish grin.
I'll see what I can do.
Does she know how adrift I felt a moment ago? Does she say this stuff to bring me back? I don't know. But right now, my heart swells with my love for her. My answering grin is just as broad. Let's go.
It's so good to see you so happy, darling,
Grace says, her gaze unwavering as she presses her palm against my cheek. Thanks for lunch. I give her a quick peck.
You are welcome always, Christian. This is your home, too.
Thank you, Mom. I pull her into an impulsive hug. She beams up at me, then turns her attention to Anna, hugging her hard. When I manage to pry Anna from my mother's clutches, we wave our goodbyes to everyone else and head to the car. As we do, it occurs to me that her decrepit beetle must have been a stick shift, too. Let's do this, Gray. Here. I toss the R8 key at Anastasia. She catches it with one hand. Don't bend it, or I will be fucking pissed.
Are you sure?
Her voice is full of excitement. Yes, before I change my mind. What's mine is yours, baby. Even this, I think. She lights up like Christmas, and rolling my eyes at her elation, I open the driver's door to let her in. She starts the engine before I'm even in the car. Eager, Mrs. Gray? I ask as I fasten my seatbelt.
Very.
She flashes me a wild-eyed smile, and I wonder if I've made a huge mistake. She doesn't take the top down. My girl is not wasting any time. Slowly, she reverses so that she can turn the car around in the driveway. I glance behind us, and Sawyer and Ryan are scrambling into the SUV. Where were they? Anna reaches the end of the driveway and glances nervously at me. Her early bravado has slipped a little.
You're sure about this?
Yes, I lie. She inches out into the road and I brace myself. As soon as she's on the pavement, she puts the pedal to the metal and we shoot down the street. Fuck.
Whoa, Anna, slow down, you'll kill us both.
She eases off the accelerator.
Sorry,
she says, but I know from her tone she's anything but, and I'm reminded of our time only yesterday on the jet ski. I smirk at her. Well, that counts as misbehaving. Anna slows down a little more. Good. That's got her attention. She drives steadily along Lake Washington Boulevard and through the 10th Street intersection. My phone buzzes. Shit. I struggle to retrieve it from my jeans. It's Sawyer. What? I snap.
Sorry to disturb you, Mr. Gray. Are you aware of the black Dodge following you?
No. Turning around, I survey the street behind us through the cramped rear window of the R8, but as we're on a bend, I don't see any cars.
Mrs. Gray is driving?
Yes, she is. Anna turns onto 84th Avenue.
The Dodge set off after you left. The driver was waiting in the car. We ran the plates. They're fake. We don't want to take any chances. Could be nothing, or it could be something.
I see.
Myriad thoughts dart through my mind. Maybe this is just a coincidence. No. After everything that's happened recently, this can't be a coincidence, and whoever is following us could be armed. My scalp prickles with alarm. How could this have happened? Sawyer and Ryan were out there the whole time, weren't they? They didn't think it odd that someone was sitting in a car? Did it follow us to my parents' place?
Do you want to try to lose them?
Sawyer asks.
Yes. Will Mrs. Gray be okay?
I don't know. When has she ever let me down? Anna is concentrating on the road ahead, but her earlier spirit has vanished and her grip on the steering wheel has tightened. She's figured out something's wrong. We're fine. Keep going. I tell her in the most soothing tone I can muster. Her eyes widen, and I know I've failed to reassure her. Shit. I pick up the phone again. Sawyer is talking.
We haven't been able to get a close look at the driver. The 520 is probably the best place to try. Mrs. Gray could try to lose them there, too. The Dodge is no match for the R8.
Okay, on the 520, as soon as we hit it, I say. Damn, I wish I was driving.
We'll be right behind the Dodge. We'll try to come alongside it. Are you okay with this?
Yes.
Do you want to put us on speaker so Mrs. Gray can hear us?
I will. I slot the phone onto the speaker cradle.
What's wrong, Christian? Just look where you're going, baby.
I murmur gently. I don't want you to panic, but as soon as we're on the 520 proper, I want you to step on the gas. We're being followed. Anna blinks several times as she absorbs this news, and the color drains from her cheeks. Shit. She sits up straighter and squints into the rearview mirror, no doubt trying to identify our pursuer. Keep your eyes on the road, baby. I speak softly, calmly. I don't want to spook Anna any more than she's spooked already. We just need to get back to Escala as quickly as possible and lose this asshole.
How do we know we're being followed?
Her voice is high-pitched and breathless.
The Dodge behind us has false license plates.
She drives carefully across the 28th Street intersection, around the roundabout, and up the 520 on-ramp. Traffic is light, so that's something. Anna's eyes flick to the rearview mirror, then she takes a deep breath and abruptly seems to slow down.
Anna, what are you doing?
She's studying the flow of traffic. Suddenly she drops a gear and floors the gas, so we shoot forward through a break in the traffic onto the highway. The Dodge has to slow right down to a crawl to wait for a gap to follow us.
Whoa, Anna. Clever girl. But we're going too fast.
Steady, baby.
I keep my voice even, though inside my stomach is in knots. She drops her speed and starts to weave between the two lanes. Knotting my hands together, I hold them in my lap so I don't distract her.
Good girl.
I glance behind us. I can't see the Dodge.
We're right behind the unsub, Mr. Gray,
Sawyer's voice says over the speaker.
He's trying to catch up with you, sir. We're going to try to come alongside. Put ourselves between your car and the Dodge.
Good. Mrs. Gray is doing well. At this rate, provided the traffic remains light, and from what I can see it is, we'll be off the bridge in a few minutes.
Sir.
We speed past the bridge control tower. We're halfway. Anna is traveling fast, but smoothly and confidently. She's got this. You're doing really well, Anna.
Where am I headed?
Mrs. Gray, head for I-5 and then south. We want to see if the Dodge follows you all the way.
The lights on the bridge are green, thank goodness, and Anna continues at speed. Shit. There are cars backed up coming off the bridge. Anna slows, and I see her glance in the rearview mirror, looking for the Dodge.
10 or so cars back,
she says. Staring behind us, I spot it.
Yeah, I see it. I wonder who the fuck it is.
Me too. Do we know if it's a man driving?
Anna directs her comment to my phone.
No, Mrs. Gray. Could be a man or a woman. The tint is too dark.
A woman? I ask. Anna shrugs.
You're Mrs. Robinson?
What? No. I've not heard from Elena since the wedding, when she sent that fucking text. I reach for my phone and pull it out of the cradle to mute it. She's not my Mrs. Robinson, I grumble. I haven't spoken to her since my birthday.
That's not right, Gray. I called her when I gifted her the business, but now is not the time to mention that. Elena wouldn't do this. It's not her style.
Leela?
She's in Connecticut with her parents, I told you.
Are you sure?
No, but if she'd absconded, I'm sure her folks would have let Flynn know. Let's discuss this when we're home. Concentrate on what you're doing.
But it might just be some random car.
I'm not taking any risks, not where you're concerned. I sound brusque, but I don't care. Anna, as ever, is challenging. Unmuting my BlackBerry, I place it back in the speaker cradle. The traffic starts to ease, and Anna's able to increase her speed along the intersection.
What if we get stopped by the cops?
She asks. That would be a good thing.
Not for my license.
Don't worry about that. The arson attempt and Charlie Tango's sabotage are all part of a police investigation. I'm sure any police officer would be more interested in our stalker.
He's cleared the traffic and picked up speed.
Sawyer's disembodied voice is calm and informative. He's doing 90. Anna accelerates, and my beautiful car responds like the finely honed machine she is, climbing to 95 with ease.
Keep it up, Anna, I assure her.
Anna coasts onto I-5 and immediately crosses several lanes to get into the fast lane.
Smooth, baby, smooth. He's hit 100 miles per hour, sir.
Fuck.
Stay with him, Luke,
I bark at Sawyer. A semi lurches into our lane and Anna hits the brakes, so we're thrown forward.
Fucking idiot,
I shout.
Christ, he could have killed us.
Go around him, baby, I grit between clenched teeth. Anna maneuvers across three lanes, past several cars and the fucking semi, then back into the passing lane, leaving the asshole behind us. Nice move, Mrs. Gray. Where are the cops when you need them?
I don't want a ticket, Christian,
she says without heat.
Have you had a speeding ticket driving this?
No, but nearly.
Have you been stopped?
Yes.
Oh.
Charm. It all comes down to charm.
Yes, Mrs. Gray, believe it or not, I can be charming.
Now concentrate. Where's the Dodge, Sawyer? I ask.
He's just hit 110, sir,
Sawyer says. Anna gasps, and she puts her foot down so the Audi picks up speed. There's a Ford Mustang in our way.
Fucking hell. Flash the headlights,
I yell.
But that would make me an asshole.
So be an asshole,
I hiss, trying to keep my anger at the Mustang and my spiraling anxiety in check.
Where are the headlights?
Anna asks. The indicator, pull it towards you. The prick gets the message and moves over, giving us the finger.
He's the asshole, I mutter.
Get off on Stewart, I tell Anna. We're taking the Stewart Street exit, I inform Sawyer.
Head straight to Escala, sir.
Anna glances in the mirror, her brow furrowed. She signals and moves across four lanes of the highway, straight down the off-ramp, slowing down and then turning smoothly onto Stewart Street. She's amazing.
We've been damned lucky with the traffic, but that means the Dodge has too. Don't slow down, Anna. Get us home.
I can't remember the way,
she squeaks. Head south on Stewart. Keep going until I tell you when. She cruises down the street.
Shit, the lights at Yale are on yellow.
Run them, Anna, I urge. Anna overreacts and we're thrown back as we speed through the intersection, the light on red.
He's taken Stewart, Sawyer says. Stay with him, Luke.
Luke?
That's his name. Didn't you know? She glances at me.
Eyes on the road!
I yell.
Luke Sawyer?
Yes!
Why are we talking about this now?
Ah.
That's me, ma'am,
Sawyer says. The unsub is heading down Stewart, sir. He's really picking up speed.
Go, Anna, less of the fucking chit-chat.
We're stopped at the first light on Stewart, Sawyer informs us. Anna, quick, in here. I point to the parking lot on the south side of Boren Avenue. She turns sharply, gripping the steering wheel, and the expensive tires on my magnificent R8 squeal in disapproval. But Anna holds it and swerves into the crowded lot.
Shit, that must have been a quarter inch off the tread.
Drive around, quick. Anna takes us to the back of the parking lot.
In there. I point to an empty space. Anna gives me a quick, panicked look.
Just fucking do it.
I growl. And she does, perfectly, as if she'd spent her whole life driving my car. Well done, Anna. We're hidden in the parking lot between Stuart and Boren, I tell Sawyer.
Okay, sir, stay where you are. We'll follow the unsub.
He sounds a little irritated. Tough. I turn to Anna.
You okay?
Sure.
Her voice is deathly quiet, and I know she's really shaken. I try for humor to calm us both. Whoever's driving that Dodge can't hear us, you know.
Anna laughs, loudly, too loudly. She's masking her fear.
We're passing Stuart and Boren now. I see the lot. He's gone straight past you, sir.
Thank Christ. The relief is instant, for Anna, too. I blow out a breath.
Well done, Mrs. Gray. Good driving.
Reaching up, I startle her when I stroke my fingertips down her face. She takes a huge gulp of air.
Does this mean you'll stop complaining about my driving?
She asks. I laugh, and it's cathartic.
I wouldn't go so far as to say that.
Thank you for letting me drive your car, under such exciting circumstances, too.
She's trying to stay bright, but she sounds brittle, as if she's about to break. I switch off the ignition, as she's made no attempt to do so. Maybe I should drive, I offer.
To be honest, I don't think I can climb out right now to let you sit here. My legs feel like jello.
Her hands are shaking. It's the adrenaline, baby. You did amazingly well, as usual. You blow me away, Anna. You never let me down. I stroke her cheek again with the back of my hand because I need to touch her, to reassure her and me that we're safe. Tears well in her eyes, and her choked sob surprises us both as tears start coursing down her face.
No, baby, no, please don't cry.
I can't bear to see her cry. Reaching over, I unbuckle her seatbelt, grasp her waist, and pull her over the center console into my lap. Her feet remain on the driver's seat. Smoothing her hair off her face, I kiss her eyelids and her cheeks, then bury my nose in her hair as she curls her arms around my neck and sobs into my throat. Cradling her close, I let her cry it out.
Anna, 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 you did so well.
Sawyer's voice startles us.
The unsub has slowed outside of Scala. He's casing the joint.
Follow him, I order. Anna wipes her nose with the back of her hand, sniffles, and takes a deep breath.
Use my shirt, I offer, and kiss her temple.
Sorry,
she says.
What for? Don't be.
She wipes her nose again, and I hold her chin, tipping it up and kissing her tenderly.
Your lips are so soft when you cry, my beautiful, brave girl.
I keep my voice low, conscious of our security at the other end of the phone.
Kiss me again,
she whispers, and all I hear is the need in her voice. It lights a fire in my soul.
Kiss me.
Her voice is husky and insistent. Retrieving my BlackBerry from its cradle, I hang up and toss it on the seat next to her feet. I weave my fingers through her hair, holding her in place while my lips find hers and my tongue finds hers. She welcomes it, her tongue caressing mine and kissing me back with an intensity that steals my breath away. She clutches my face, her fingers skimming over stubble as she takes all I have to offer. I groan, and my body responds. All the adrenaline heading south.
Fuck, I want her.
I move my hand down her body, feeling her, brushing her breast, her waist, and landing on her backside. She moves, sliding on top of my trapped dick.
Ah!
I pull away, panting.
What?
She says against my lips. Anna, we're in a car lot in Seattle.
So?
Well, right now I want to fuck you and you're shifting around on me. It's uncomfortable.
Fuck me, then.
She kisses the corner of my mouth as her words take me by surprise.
I stare into her dark, dark eyes that are nearly all pupil, all lust, all need. Here? I breathe, shocked.
Yes, I want you now.
I can't believe she said that.
Mrs. Gray, how very brazen.
I scan our environs. We're well hidden. There's no one here. We won't be seen. We can do this. My hunger for her goes into overdrive. I tighten my grip on her hair, holding her where I want her, and kiss her again, harder, deeper, taking, taking, more and more. My other hand skims again down her body to her thigh. She grips my hair.
I'm so glad you're wearing a skirt.
My hand travels up her thigh. She wriggles on top of me.
Keep still.
I grunt, tightening my grasp on her hair at the nape. She's going to unman me. I cup her through her lace panties. They're damp already.
Oh, baby.
With my thumb, I circle her clitoris once, twice, and she groans, her body quivering at my touch.
Still.
I whisper, and capture her lips with mine, while my thumb teases the swollen bud beneath the dewy lace. I move the material aside and sink two fingers inside her. She groans and tips her hips toward my hand in greeting.
Oh, my greedy girl.
Please,
she whispers.
Oh, you're so ready.
I murmur in appreciation and slowly slide my fingers in and out. And in, and out, and in.
Do car chases turn you on?
You turn me on.
Her words feed my hunger, and I withdraw my hand and slide my arm beneath her knees and lift her so she's fully on my lap, facing the windshield. She gasps, but she starts grinding down on me. I groan.
Place your legs either side of mine,
I order, and run my hands down her outer thighs, then back up, yanking her skirt out of the way.
Hands on my knees, baby, lean forward. Lift that glorious ass in the air. Mind your head.
She raises her beautiful behind, and I unzip my jeans, freeing my heavy cock. Putting one arm around her waist, with my other hand, I tug her panties sideways, and, lifting my hips, force her down and thrust balls deep inside her in one swift move. My breath whistles through my lips.
Yes.
Anna cries out for anyone to hear, and she grinds down on me. I groan, teeth clenched. She feels out of this world. I grasp her jaw and lean her back against me and angle her head so I can kiss her throat. Grabbing her hip with my other hand to keep her steady, I move into her, and I'm in deep. She pushes up and starts to ride me, hard, fast, frantic.
I bite down on her earlobe.
She moans and moves, and together we set a heady, desperate pace, her rising and falling, me bucking into her. I move my fingers to her clitoris and start to tease her through her panties. Anna makes a garbled cry, and the sound does nothing for my restraint.
Shit, I'm going to come.
Be quick, I rasp in her ear. We need to do this quick, Anna. Sweat beads on my brow, and I increase the pressure on her clitoris, circling around and around with my fingers.
Oh,
Anna cries.
Come on, baby, I want to hear you.
We move and move, and then I feel her building, ready.
Oh, thank God.
I slam into her once more, and she tips her head back on my shoulder so she's facing the roof of the car.
Yes!
I grind out between my teeth, and she comes, loudly.
Oh, Anna!
I wrap her in my arms and climax deep inside her. When I return to reality, my head is bent against hers, and she's limp on top of me. I run my nose along her jaw and kiss her throat, her cheek, and her temple.
Tension relieved, Mrs. Gray.
I tug her earlobe. She whimpers in a good way, and I smile. That's a great sound. Certainly helped with mine, I murmur, and shift her forward, withdrawing from her. Lost your voice?
Yes,
she breathes. Well, aren't you the wanton creature? I had no idea you were such an exhibitionist. She sits up immediately, watchful and wary, her fatigue a memory.
No one's watching, are they?
She scours the parking lot. Do you think I'd let anyone watch my wife come? I stroke my hand down her back and she calms, turning around to give me a sweet, playful smile.
Car sex,
she exclaims, and her eyes flare with a sense of achievement, I think. I grin. Yes, it's a first for me too, Anna. I tuck a wayward strand of hair behind her ear. Let's head back. I'll drive. Leaning forward, I open the car door, and Anna clambers off my lap so I can do up my fly. When I'm back in the driver's seat, I call our security detail.
Mr. Gray, it's Ryan. Where's Sawyer?
I snap.
At Escala.
And the Dodge?
I'm following the Dodge south on I-5.
How come Sawyer's not with you?
He thought it better to wait at Escala once we saw her.
Her? I gasp.
Yes, the driver is a woman, says Ryan. I was going to follow her to see if we can ID her.
Stick with her.
Will do.
I hang up and look at Anna.
The driver of the Dodge is female?
She sounds shocked.
So it would appear.
I have no idea who it might be. It can't be Elena, and surely not Leela. Not after all the work that Flynn has put in with her. Let's get you home. The R8 growls to life, and I reverse out of the space and head home.
Where's the, unsub? What does that mean, by the way? Sounds very BDSM.
It stands for unknown subject. Ryan is ex-FBI.
Ex-FBI?
Don't ask. That's a long story about doing the right thing, protecting an innocent, and getting fired for it. I'll tell her over dinner. He's probably why we know the plates on the Dodge were false. He has extensive connections.
Well, where is this female unsub?
Anna continues. On I-5, heading south. Whoever it is drove past our place, scouted it out, and left. Who the hell is it? Anna reaches over and runs her fingers down my inner thigh. Whoa. We're stopped at a red. I scoop her hand into mine to stop its progress to my dick. No, we've made it this far. You don't want me to have an accident 3 blocks from home. I kiss her index finger and release her, and concentrate on getting us back in one piece. I need a thorough debrief from Sawyer. I'm pissed that there was someone waiting for us outside my parents' house. Surely they should have seen the Dodge. What the hell am I paying them for? Anna is quiet until we approach the garage at Escala.
Female?
She says out of nowhere. She sounds incredulous. Apparently so. I sigh and punch in the code to raise the gate to the garage. Yeah, I wish I knew who. Welch has investigated all my ex-submissives, even those from the private club I used to frequent. They're all in the clear, as I knew they would be. I'll check on Leela via Flynn, but last I heard she was happy back in the bosom of her family. I ease the R8 into her designated space.
I really like this car,
Anna says, giving me a welcome break from my dark thoughts. Me too, and I like how you handled it, and how you managed not to break it. She smirks.
You can buy me one for my birthday.
Anastasia Gray. I gape at her, shocked. I don't think she's ever asked me for anything, but she steps out of the car before I can respond. I'm so astonished, I don't know what to say. Once out, before she closes the door, she bends down and flashes me a sassy grin.
A white one, I think.
I laugh. White. Apt choice. She is the light to my darkness. Anastasia Gray, you never cease to amaze me. She shuts the door and I get out after her. She's waiting by the trunk, looking every bit the just-fucked goddess who wants a $200,000 car. She's never asked me for anything. Why is that so hot?
Leaning down, I whisper, you like the car, I like the car, I've fucked you in it. Perhaps I should fuck you on it.
She gasps, and her cheeks pink in that delightful way I love. The sound of a car pulling into the garage distracts me. It's a silver 3-series BMW. Cock blocker. But it looks like we have company. Come.
Taking her hand, I guide her to the elevator. Sadly, we have to wait, and we're joined by Mr. BMW Cockblocker. He looks my age, maybe younger.
Hi,
he says, with an appreciative smile aimed at my wife. I put my arm around Anna. Back off, bud.
I've just moved in, apartment 16, he gushes at her.
Hello,
Anna says, her tone nothing but friendly. We're saved by the elevator. Once inside, I keep Anna close. I glance down at her, willing her not to engage with this stranger.
You're Christian Gray,